Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Fatal Feast by Kathleen Bridge, narrated by Vanessa Daniels. Chapter 1. "I'm sorry, Mr. Seaton. You're welcome at the winery," Bethany Garnier said, clutching a corkscrew in her right hand. "But you, Meg Barrett, certainly are not." There was a definite edge to her voice that my hearing aids had no problem picking up. "But," I said, confused. Then Bethany, the owner of Garnier Vineyards, one of the Hamptons' premier Long Island wineries, cleared things up toot sweet. "You've got a lot of nerve showing your face. I heard it was your construction guys who renovated my former family home into some posh A-list restaurant. And it was your company, Cottages by the Sea, that did the restaurant's interior design. Maison Garnier was constructed stone by stone to be a replica of my family's centuries-old farmhouse in Bordeaux that the Nazis destroyed. I was under the impression that a family with three small children bought it, not some conglomerate. My real estate agent must be on the take." Bethany took a step toward us. I took a step back. Patrick held tight to my hand and pulled me forward. He was right. I was never one to shy away from a confrontation. Lately, I'd been trying hard to mind my own business by focusing on my blissful existence in Montauk, which entailed living in my small oceanfront cottage, junking and rehabbing vintage finds to use in my clients' cozy homes, helping the set designer find items from the 1930s for the streaming mystery series Mr. and Mrs. Winslow, and enjoying my budding relationship with Patrick Seaton, a formerly reclusive writer who'd moved to Montauk following the tragic deaths of his wife and child. I use the word formerly because in the past, when Patrick and I'd exchanged classical poetry in the sand, he'd only select gloomy verses. Now, ever since we'd started dating, some of his verses were downright sunny. I prayed that I'd been the catalyst to his metamorphosis, just as he'd been to mine. Glancing at Bethany's angry face, I said meekly, "I wouldn't call the three owners of Privé a conglomerate. As far as I know, they're all local business owners. And from my understanding, Privé's not really a restaurant. It's more like an exclusive gourmet dining club." I added, "You have to be a member to get in the door." "Sounds like a restaurant to me," Bethany said, raising her thin upper lip in a sneer. "Does our mutual friend L know about your treachery?" "Sure," I said. "Elle knows all about my assignment at Privé. Half the interior decor came from Mabel and Elle's curiosities. However, I'm pretty sure, like myself, she had no idea the farmhouse had been yours. Or why it should matter," I thought. Elle Schoner was my best friend and partner in crime involving anything having to do with vintage decor. Elle had told me that she and winery owner Bethany's friendship dated back to when Elle's late great-aunt Mabel and Bethany's grandmother were friends. I only knew Bethany from my visits to Garnier Vineyards accompanied by either Elle or Patrick. "Well, I'll be sure to give her a call about all of this," Bethany snapped. I felt my cheeks warm, then looked beseechingly at Patrick, whose handsome face was probably the same shade of pink as my own. Bethany had always been friendly, even sending out special on-the-house tapas plates to go with our wine flights. Noticing her clenched jaw, it looked like the word friendly no longer applied. Trying to appease her, I added, "The construction team did a great job on the exterior of Privé. I think if you came over to see it, you'll like what's been done." Like it," she stuttered. She took a few more menacing steps toward us. She raised her hand as if to push me away. I held my ground. "Bethany, I swear I didn't know the farmhouse used to be your family's home." We were about the same height, 5'7", but I had 10 pounds on her. A moot point, judging by the expression on her face and the bulging vein at her temple. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. I didn't think I was the one Bethany should be upset with. I was just the hired help, as Jackie, one of the partners at Privé, reminded me of on more than one occasion. Tears glistened in Bethany's usually smiling, vibrant eyes. "Grand Père was born there." Then why had she sold it? I reached in my handbag, grabbed a package of tissues, and handed her one. Bethany took out a few and blew her nose. Bethany's customers, who were sitting on the patio under a white slated pergola, had all eyes trained on us. I'm sure, like myself, they'd never seen usually mellow Bethany in such a state. But I was innocent. All I'd known before this evening was that her Sagaponic vineyard and wine-tasting operation was across the pond from Privé. Now, glancing at Bethany's quivering chin and gritted teeth, I wished that Patrick and I had opted for a quiet night home. It was the Thursday before Labor Day weekend, and we'd planned on having a farewell and good riddance toast to summer, knowing that soon the seasonal Hamptons crowd would be heading due west. We were just days away from having the east end of Long Island all to ourselves. Hallelujah. And what a summer it had been. There'd been campfires and clam bakes on the beach and gourmet meals at Patrick's kitchen counter, which he'd made in the workshop behind his oceanfront cottage. I wasn't allowed anywhere near his stove due to my lack of culinary skills and tendency to overcook. Okay, burn things. Then there was the simple bliss of twilight evenings when we'd sit side by side reading on his or my screened porch, both of us trying to convince the other of our favorite genre's merits. Even though Patrick wrote fiction, he enjoyed reading historical biographies. I read mostly fiction, preferring whodunit mysteries. But there was one thing we both loved to read, classical poetry. Sorry, Bethany, I truly am, I repeated ad nauseam. You must believe me. Privé will never compete with Garnier Vineyards. Everyone loves it here. It would be a lie if I'd said I would have given up the assignment knowing that Bethany was the former owner of the building that housed Privé. Former being the key word. The money I'd been paid to transform the interior of the renovated French farmhouse into an elite dining club was the most I'd made in a year since moving to Montauk, and close to the salary I received as editor-in-chief on American Home and Garden magazine before fleeing Manhattan and a cheating fiancé for the serenity only the salt life could offer. I admitted that the two-timing fiancé story was clichéd, and my exodus on the wimpy side, but my move to the easternmost tip of Long Island turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to me, and Patrick was just the icing on the cake. Bethany looked from me to Patrick, her hands at her sides as she tried to hold down her gauzy boho caftan from the stiff breeze blowing in from the ocean only a half mile away. She and I weren't besties like my newly married bosom buddy Elle and I were. However, we'd always been friendly, chatting about things like local charity events, Bethany's wine recommendations, and Garnier Winery's delicious farm-to-table tapas plates that came with each wine-tasting experience. A sip and bite, and you were off to gastronomic heaven. She pointed the corkscrew in my direction. Her red wine-stained fingertips matched the color of her long, wild hair. I suppose you and these partners, more like thieves, didn't know that next spring I have plans to open a full-service restaurant. It would be easy enough for anyone to look up the architect's plans that I filed at the courthouse. It's obvious one of those traitors must have the zoning commission in their pocket. How else can you explain the property going from residential to commercial in a blink of an eye? As I said, it's not really a restaurant, more of a gourmet club. If you want, maybe I could put in a word with Chef Kelsey about ordering some of Garnier Vineyard's wines for Privé. Kelsey Stevens from Pondfair in Montauk? She asked, surprised, her countenance softening. Yes, I answered. She's the chef de cuisine. And someone named Sasha is her sous chef. I know Kelsey. She's great, Bethany said, lowering the corkscrew. An amazing chef. I'll call her myself. And please don't tell me you're referring to that tramp Sasha Morgan as being the restaurant's sous chef. Good luck on that one. She worked here for a brief time. Very brief. Then we got rid of her. It's not a restaurant, I repeated for the last time. My involvement in Privé was over. All that was left to do was to attend the small dinner the partners were throwing tomorrow night. Duke and Duke Junior Construction had done their job of renovating the exterior of the Stone Farmhouse to its former glory, and I'd completed my contract by filling Privet with upscale French farmhouse slash cottage decor. "You know what? There's nothing to worry about," Bethany said. "I'll just wait until Privet fails because of Sasha. Then I'll buy the place for a fraction of the price they bought it for. What an ostentatious name. Who came up with it?" "I'm not sure," I mumbled. "But I do know that translated from French to English, Privet means private." "My family's French. I know what the word means," she snapped. I didn't like being talked to in such a condescending manner and was ready to tell her so. But then I looked up at Patrick. He squeezed my hand, which I took to mean, just let her vent. I repeated a few mantras I used when meditating on my beach, took a deep breath, and exhaled to the count of four. "No one will come in the off-season anyway," she said. "It'll be fun to watch pretentious Privet's ruin. Meg, maybe I will stop by for that tour you offered. Catch a peek before it goes belly up. My new restaurant will be available to everyone, not just the Hamptons elite. We'll see who the victor is."
Sounds like a plan," I said. "A bad plan."
Bethany looked at Patrick, who up until now hadn't said a word. Then she broke into sobs. Patrick let go of my hand and went to her, placing the palm of his right hand on her shoulder.
"It can't be that bad," he said softly. "Garnier Vineyards has been in the Hamptons for decades. I've never been here when it hasn't been packed, even in the winter."
His words seemed to calm her.
"Patrick," I whispered, "maybe we should go?"
"No," Bethany said, drying her eyes. "Please don't. I'm fine. Meg, I'm sorry for taking things out on you. It's been such a struggle now that Tom is gone. He was the business part of our marriage. I should have held out for a better price for the farmhouse. All I wanted to do was sell it to a family that could restore it to its former glory. Then I would move on to build the restaurant Tom and I always dreamed of. Patrick, you can relate to my loss because of your Catherine and Lucy. I'm not sure if you knew this, but early in their careers, your wife and my Tom worked together as newbie chefs at one of Daniel Boulud's restaurants in Manhattan. Tom always said Catherine was a better chef than he was."
"I didn't know that," Patrick said in a barely audible voice. Then he turned his head and looked off into the distance.
I was floored that Patrick's late wife had been a chef. I was the worst cook on the planet, which Patrick had witnessed on more than one occasion. It also explained why he was such an excellent home chef, on par with my father. He'd learned from his deceased wife. I felt warm tingling as the Barrett blotches started up from my chest, traveled to my neck, then burned my cheeks. Patrick's tragedy had not been something we'd discussed, though he knew everything about my recent breakup with Cole Spencer. Not that I could compare the two losses. Patrick won, hands down. Before I could ask if he was okay, Patrick strode away and went to stand at the wood railing overlooking the pond. A breeze blew back his light brown hair, highlighted with sunstreaks of gold from surfing at Amagansett's Ditch Plains Beach. He confessed at the beginning of June that he usually fled the Hamptons during the summer tourist season. It was obvious he'd stayed because of me. Now I wondered if at the mention of Catherine, he might have regretted our time together. I knew I never would. I glanced back at Bethany. Had she mentioned Catherine on purpose, as payback for my involvement at Privet?
"Now I've done it," Bethany said, looking over at Patrick's stiff stance.
"It must be hard dating him with all that baggage. Tom told me Patrick was despondent after the accident. Or should I say, vehicular homicide by that drunk driver. So tragic. And his little girl. I must give him credit for dating again. I know I'll never find anyone like my Tom. I don't even plan on looking. Tom was irreplaceable."
Bethany was my age, in her early 30s. It seemed a little young to give up on finding someone else. And didn't Patrick deserve some happiness?
Patrick must have known we were talking about him, or at least Bethany was.
He turned and smiled at us. As if reading my thoughts, Bethany said, "You better go to him. You don't want him going down that slippery slope of depression. Did you happen to read that last book he wrote? The Sting of the Sea. A wonderful book, but so sad." Then she walked away to greet some regular customers. I felt gutted. I stood there, not knowing whether I should take her advice or give Patrick time alone. I had read The Sting of the Sea. It had been a departure from his thrillers, and I understood where he must have been coming from because it had come out a year after the tragedy. But Bethany had been wrong that it was his last work of fiction, because he'd recently released another thriller and had a contract to write two more. And besides that, his screenwriting for the Mr. and Mrs. Winslow television mystery series was certainly upbeat and occasionally laugh-out-loud funny. Why was I second-guessing our relationship? I knew why. Catherine. I took a few steps in his direction, and he did the same toward me. When he reached me, he put his arm around my shoulder and gave me a kiss on the top of my head.
Everything okay with Bethany?
I think so. Let's have that toast we talked about. Then go home and make a bonfire. You burn the most perfect marshmallows, he said, adding a mischievous grin. I smiled up at him, happy for his cheerful banter, but wishing at the same time that there was something I could do to make it all better. But I couldn't. He needed to find his own peace. In his own time. I wasn't going anywhere, and I wasn't about to give up on happiness. Our happiness. Or so I told myself, as we walked toward our high-top table, and a nagging, green-eyed monster hopped onto my shoulder and whispered, "Meg Barrett, how can you compete with a ghost?" Chapter 2. I'd wanted to bring Patrick to Friday night's pre-opening dinner at Privé, but Chef Kelsey made it clear that we were to be a closed group. The three partners, Head Chef Kelsey, Sous Chef Sasha, and myself. Not even the waitstaff was allowed inside. Hence the reason I was in the kitchen, acting as combination bus girl and server, bringing in our dirty dishes, then taking out the next course. If the food wasn't so darn good, I would have complained about my servitude. With the final payment for my design services safely in my handbag and an amuse-bouche in my belly that had lived up to its name of being the chef's choice of a teaser, a one-bite hors d'oeuvre consisting of a marinated smoked oyster, creme fraiche, and a smidgen of caviar atop a sterling silver tablespoon, I was happy to help. The faster the service went, the faster it would hit my belly. Plus, I was curious to find out the partner's first impressions of how I'd done designing the interior of Privé. Ever since yesterday, when Bethany had gone off the rails about her family's former home, I couldn't help but look at Privé in a different light, wondering how long it had sat unoccupied. Judging by its original ramshackle condition, it must have been uninhabitable for at least a decade, maybe two. So far, the only partner who'd been a thorn in my side during the interior design process was Jackie, or Mrs. Putnam Fairchild, as I was ordered to address her. She'd wanted me to go with a more formal, over-the-top, drenched-in-gold French chateau aesthetic. The two male partners, one of them her husband, wanted Privé's furnishings and decor to be more on the masculine, rustic side. I'd thought I'd done a good job compromising on both decor styles, refusing to let Jackie's jabs get to me, even if she was, as she claimed, a cousin twice or thrice removed from Hamptonite Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis's father, Black Jack Bouvier. Thinking about family ties, my mind wandered again to last night's scene at Garnier Vineyards. Why had Bethany been so upset? As far as I knew, the winery business was flourishing. Last year, during the Hamptons garden tour, I'd visited Bethany's magnificent oceanfront home in Bridgehampton. By its opulence, she hadn't looked like she was hurting for cash. Maybe money had nothing to do with why Bethany had been so distraught. It was more a matter of losing her grandfather's home and all the memories that went along with it. I understood a love for nostalgia, an understatement, which was one of the reasons my cozy cottage's screen porch was a replica of my grandfather's in Michigan. Maybe Elle could convince Bethany to come take a peek at what I'd done to the farmhouse.
Bethany would see that I'd kept to the original floor plan of the old farmhouse, only knocking down one wall that wasn't load-bearing.
I'd left the wood-stained rafters on the ceiling untouched, then painted the rough stone walls and ceilings a clean linen white. For the exterior of the farmhouse, my construction guys had sandblasted the stone facade, then whitewashed it, making it appear older than its 75 years. Cracked window panes had been replaced with thick hurricane glass. And in the old cottage at the rear of the property, I'd made a serendipitous discovery. The farmhouse's original 10-foot-tall cedar shutters. I'd touched them up in a paint shade close to their original color by mixing duck egg blue with pale smoke gray. The best part was that all the shutters, even the pair on either side of the front door, were functional and could be closed during a nor'easter or hurricane. Seeing it was the last week in August, I knew foul weather was still a possibility. Never underestimate Mother Nature when living near the Atlantic Ocean. "Sasha, when the hell are you going to get it right?" Chef Kelsey shouted, and my left hearing aid buzzed with static. "Sasha, look at that plate!" Kelsey pointed over to the Carrera marble island where her sous chef sat on a bar stool, sipping a glass of wine. Kelsey, Privé's head chef, had used the same tone that a mother might use on her naughty child, but she wasn't old enough to be Sasha's mother. Maybe an older sister. "Is your work on that plate aesthetically pleasing to you?" "It isn't to me," Kelsey admonished. "Do you see anything wrong? I wouldn't give that to my dog, and she'll eat anything. We're serving this meal to the owners of Privé, the same threesome who can hire and fire us at will." She rolled her eyes in my direction. "Sasha, are you even listening?" "Thought you were one of the partners," Sasha said, not in the least ruffled by her boss. "Who told you that?" she asked. Kelsey was attractive in a healthy, wholesome way. Clear skin, no makeup, except a light dusting of mascara on her long lashes above large, expressive dark brown eyes that matched the color of her naturally curly short hair. "A little birdie," Sasha said, taking another sip of wine. On the other hand, Kelsey's sous chef wore expertly applied makeup that brought out her high cheekbones and startling blue-violet eyes that she'd lined in thick black eyeliner. The color of her eyes was reminiscent of those I'd seen in photos of the actress Elizabeth Taylor. Unlike Kelsey, there was nothing understated about Sasha. "I'll only receive a small percentage of the business," Kelsey said, "and that won't be for a year. As if it's any of your business, sous chef." She opened one of the refrigerated drawers next to the sink and took out a lemon. "I'm not an equal partner, not even close. But you're right, Sasha. I do have a stake in Privé. So get your act together before it's too late." Kelsey's former boss, Pierre Patou, the head chef and owner of Pond Fair in Montauk, had been the one who'd recommended my one-woman design business, Cottages by the Sea, to Privé's partners. Not that he advertised it, but Chef Patou had earned a Michelin star and was recently the winner of television's Top Chef Challenge. He was from the old school of fine dining, more concerned with his food than basking in the notoriety of winning the competition. His recently published 600-page cookbook, Nouveau French-American Cuisine, was now at the top of every nonfiction bestseller list, here and abroad. I'd known Kelsey from my frequent visits to Pond Fair, when she'd been Chef Patou's sous chef. We'd also bonded over lessons at Karen's Creative Knitting in Montauk. Sometimes those lessons turned into group therapy sessions. At one of our classes, I'd shared a few things about Coles and my breakup. Then Kelsey trumped my story by telling our small group about her divorce and three miscarriages. Apparently, she'd blamed the hormones taken during her IVF treatments for the anger and resentment she directed at her innocent husband. Her single-minded goal had only been to conceive. Then one day, her husband just walked out the door and never came back. The next thing Kelsey knew, he'd opened a tech company on the West Coast. "I have no regrets," she'd said, sniffling. "In a way, Pond Fair saved my life. The restaurant became the child I couldn't have. Each of the women warriors in our knitting group had rushed over to her side and gave her consoling hugs. Then, after tea and lavender scones were served, the afternoon ended with more smiles than tears.
"I don't see why you're in such a tizzy," Sasha said. "It's only dinner for five. And her."
She nodded her head in my direction.
"We have to get these 10 courses perfect for tomorrow for when potential club members arrive."
Kelsey's jaw was clenched as she gazed angrily at Sasha. I wondered if she might have been better off staying at Pondfair. I'd never once heard her raise her voice in Pondfair's kitchen or elsewhere. On the other hand, Chef Patu's shouting and berating of his staff could be heard all the way to Pondfair's usually packed dining room. Kelsey's face was as red as the plum tomatoes she slid into a simmering copper pot.
"I don't have time to babysit, Sasha. Get your act together, or else."
Then she marched over to the center island and tossed the cutting board from the tomatoes into the double farm sink, managing to decapitate the top of a champagne flute from its stem. I cringed. Not from the sound of shattering crystal. My hearing aids didn't pick up the high-pitched sound. It was that one of the set of 40 I'd found on an online French antique shop had been destroyed. The cost for shipping the glasses had almost exceeded the cost of their purchase. Not that I'd paid for the set out of my pocket. It was one of the perks of my design assignment at Privé. Money didn't seem to be an issue. The chef de cuisine didn't notice my distress because she was too focused on her assistant. I went to the sink, picked up the 2 pieces of glass, wrapped them in paper towel, then threw them in the trash. I didn't want anyone to cut themselves, or worse yet, for Kelsey to grab a shard and use it as a weapon against her sous chef. Sasha clapped her hands.
"Good going, chef. You broke a glass. Lee won't be happy when I tell him."
She turned her head toward me and said, "And I can tell you've upset her, too. Who are you again?"
"Maybe if you spent more time at Privé during the past 2 weeks, you would have met Meg," Kelsey answered. "Meg, this is Sasha Morgan, my supposed assistant chef. Sasha, Meg Barrett, Privé's interior designer."
"Oh yeah, good job. Place looks great. Should have known chef here had nothing to do with the kitchen's flawless design." Kelsey mumbled a warning under her breath, then turned and strode over to one of 2 wall ovens. She cracked open the oven door, then quickly shut it. A yeasty aroma escaped and mixed with the other heavenly scents coming from assorted simmering pots on the 8-burner stove.
"Needs another minute and a half," Kelsey said to herself. "I'm the one that should be doing the baking," Sasha said, sticking out her pouty lower lip.
Unlike Kelsey, Sasha wore a white chef's toque and white chef's coat that fit her in all the right places. Her sleek raven black hair was fashioned into a single braid that trailed down to the middle of her back.
"Out of my way!"
Sasha pushed back her bar stool, which made a scraping noise against the tile that my hearing aids did pick up, stood and charged over to the ovens.
"Baking's my job, not yours. I went to pastry school, remember?"
Kelsey laughed.
"That's funny. Then where were you when I was making the pastry?"
"I'm executive chef, and you'll do as I say. Finish plating the 1st course. I won't tolerate insubordination. It's been a trying 2 weeks since you showed up."
"How can it be trying? You just said I was never here."
"Sasha, I think you'd be better off working at one of the other hundreds of restaurants in the Hamptons. Lord knows we have enough of them."
"I thought this wasn't a restaurant, it was a club."
Sasha put quotation marks in the air.
"Semantics. If things don't go well tonight, I'm going to have a talk with the partners. See if I can hire someone more experienced."
Now it was Sasha's turn to blow a fuse.
"Try it. You won't like it."
I moved to the other side of the kitchen and backed up to the door of the walk-in combination refrigerator-freezer, wishing I had a reason to go inside and get out of the line of fire, although I wasn't the one that needed to cool off.
"Is that a threat?" Kelsey asked. "Chillax, Kel. What's the big deal? You'll never be able to fire me, so let's be pals, at least for tonight."
Kelsey ignored her, grabbed two oven mitts from a drawer, put them on, then opened the oven and removed a metal sheet pan topped with six mini bread bowls. She put the pan on the granite counter, picked up a spatula, then transferred each bread bowl to a
sample complete. Ready to continue?